Okay, folks, you are listening to the latest chapter, the latest spectacular edition of the now once a week Life on Planet Porky, starring, of course, not just myself, the Porkmeister, but the rock chick writer extraordinaire, Ms. Leslie Ann Jones. Miss Jones, how are we?
We're very good this morning, Mr. Parry, actually. The weather's picked up.
Yeah.
Sweaty old day yesterday, wasn't it?
Oh, God, don't remind me. I thought that had all gone. You know, I put out a triumphant tweet about a week ago saying, great stuff, September the 1st, first day of autumn. Meteorologically, September the 1st is the first day of autumn. Most people prefer to wait until the equinox, which is September the 22nd, to sort of welcome autumn in. But anyway, on September the 1st, it was dull and grey, and I thought, oh, this is great. This is my kind of weather. I was doing TV the other morning, and the car comes to me at 6:15, and I went outside, and there was a mist lying across the land, and I thought, oh, this is wonderful. Autumn really is here. And now we've been hit by what we call an Indian summer, and it's sweltering.
Yeah, it is. It's not really my kind of weather, I must admit. And it's just that thing of kind of being dragged down by the sweat of it all, isn't it? I think it must be something that happens to us later in life.
Yeah.
Women, I mean, because I have never had a sweaty face before.
Really?
Suddenly, I find that my face is just pouring all the time in this kind of weather. Do you have that problem?
Well, lots of things happen to us in later life as we learn, you know, each day we get older, so to speak. But I've always had a problem with the sun. I've always had a problem with perspiration, to be honest. In fact, years ago, when we used to have to wear suit and tie, when I was the news editor of the Express, I had 20 white shirts. And the reason was I used to wear only white shirts because I perspired. I couldn't help it on the way to work, you know. So I always had a spare shirt in my briefcase. Used to carry briefcases in those days. And as soon as I got to work, I'd change from the shirt I travelled to work in to a clean shirt because it was an air-conditioned office, obviously. But then by the time I'd got home after battling again, you know, through London commuter trains and all that, my second shirt was soaked by the time I got home. So I needed two shirts a day, 6 days a week. And it's always affected me. I just cannot stand the sun. I can't stand sitting in the sun or walking in the sun. And I remember one time, you've been to New York many, many times, I went with a young lady on the what they call the Circle Line, which is the boat that goes right round Manhattan. You've probably been on
it. It's a good trip, that. That is a nice... If someone's visiting New York for the first time, that is one of the things you recommend to do because you see the whole island of Manhattan.
You see the whole island, you go under all the bridges, and you've always usually got somebody commentating who is an expert on New York and tells you, oh, you know, all the landmarks and all that kind of stuff, you know what I mean? But unfortunately, we were sitting on the top deck and there was no shade, and I literally fainted. You know, the intense heat can be like in Manhattan.
It's very hot. It's those extreme temperatures. It's a bit like Madrid.
Yeah.
I think it's because it's built on granite, isn't it? And so you get the extremes, really, really cold in the winter.
Yes, that's
right. And unbearably hot in the summer.
Yeah, one of the other problems with New York is because there's so many skyscrapers, they act like thermos blocks. So they absorb heat all the way during the day, and that's why it never goes cold at night. They throw the heat out at night when the sun goes down, you know what I mean? So it's constantly boiling hot. But anyway, there we are. I've debated for years whether or not to get central heating installed in my apartment here in Stockbroker Belt, Surrey, and I've always thought, is it worth it for 4 or 5 days a year? But last night I made the decision, this autumn I'm going to have it done. I can't stand another night like last night, honestly, it's just awful. So,
do you mean air conditioning rather than central heating?
Air conditioning, yeah, I get air conditioning.
You said central heating, so I thought, blimey.
Yeah. Well, what did I say?
You couldn't have been cold last night. Yeah, you
did. Sorry, I'm going mad.
Well, take it back. You meant air conditioning, right?
I meant air conditioning.
I tell you what, though. I mean, sorry, but global warming, things like air conditioning are contributing to climate change. So I won't even put the central heating on in my home until it's so unbearably cold that I can't sleep. Because I think during the day I can just put on some more clothes.
Yeah.
I actually can do that at night as well. I mean, you know, stick a tracksuit on if you're cold.
Yeah.
But it's never that cold that you need the central heating on round the clock.
Oh, well, I put the central heating on. No, at night you probably don't need it because you're under a duvet and all that. But I put it on during the day. But I'm like you. I believe central heating makes people fat. because you're too comfortable, you sit down, you get lazy, you start eating. I like you. I keep the windows open all year round. I like a bit of fresh air. But anyway, look, enough of that. Now, Ms. Jones, you've been very busy with your book, Freddie Mercury. Every time I turn on a radio or switch on the TV, I see your face talking about Freddie Mercury, and you've had some fantastic reviews of this book, and I can only assume that it's heading towards the top of the bestseller list.
But you know, I've been amazed by it. The publicists at Hodder and Stoughton, who have obviously published this book, they have pulled out all the stops. And yeah, as you say, they've got us everything. I've been on BBC Radio 4 Today programme, Sky News, GB News Television, Steve Wright in the afternoon. I'm doing Australian TV's They Start Tonight.
Yes.
As well as, you know, Talk Radio Europe, Times Radio, all of these regionals as well. And it has not stopped. I've never known anything like it.
Yeah, well,
I'm really thrilled, and everyone's been really nice about the book.
Yeah,
so, no, great. Yeah,
fantastic. Great. And of course, Freddie, it just proves, doesn't it, that some people are so iconic, they'll never be forgotten about. You've already written books about John Lennon and other people, but Freddie Mercury, certainly massively iconic. What can you tell us that's new about him?
Well, do you know what occurred to me? Because the recurring question is, why write another book about Freddie Mercury 30 years after his death? And
everybody seems very excited about it, I have to say.
Well, yeah, but you know, the key to this is that Freddie has become two things that he wasn't during his lifetime.
Yeah.
The first one is that he's a big icon to the LGBTQ community.
Yeah.
And he wasn't that while he was alive. He was closeted. He never came out. So it's ironic that he's become this big figure of this paragon of an example to these people. They don't even really know that he didn't come out. My kids certainly didn't know that.
No, exactly.
What do you mean he wasn't out? You know, he was a gay man in a gay relationship.
Yeah.
Yes, I know, but he never came out. Mm. And the other thing is, he's become this sort of Disney poster boy for diversity.
Right.
Which is something else he wasn't during his lifetime. He was born in an African territory, Zanzibar. He was educated in India at an English-style boarding school.
Yeah.
But when came the revolution in Zanzibar in 1964 and his family ran for their lives and came to settle in the UK, he turned his back on his past and he wasn't interested in his African and Indian roots.
Yeah.
So he, to all intents and purposes, became white British at that point.
Mm.
So it's very interesting that he's become this sort of paragon of ethnicity.
Yeah, no, I totally agree. Zanzibar is one of those places which actually you don't believe exists, do you? It's like Timbuktu, you know what I mean? It's a name of a foreign land, but it's almost like it's sort of was in, you know, Dr. Doolittle's book or something, but it's not really there. But of course it is, isn't it?
I went there a couple of times and I can tell you it's there for sure. But
yeah,
it's had a very troubled history down the centuries. And because of its strategic position, it's just off the coast of Tanzania in East Africa. And it's been invaded and occupied by all kinds of peoples over all the years. And the trouble is there was always so much infighting because the indigenous people were essentially African slaves. So it was more of a civil war than it was a revolution. People have said, you know, in writing many times, oh, it was an uprising against the British because we were there and in control. But it wasn't that, actually. It was between the Arabs and the Africans.
Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. Which takes us on to another very topical story, which is Afghanistan. Because Afghanistan, of course, is I mean, obviously, you know, they've always beaten the invaders, going right back to the first Afghan war in 1829, which were the British. And then, of course, the Russians tried it in the 20th century. Americans tried it in this century and unfailed. But that's all about warring tribes within. What do you feel about the number of Afghanistan people we're taking in this country, Leslie Ann? Do you believe that we have to, you know, try as hard as we can to accommodate maybe, I don't know, 25,000 people from Afghanistan?
Yes, of course we should do that. These poor people have to go somewhere.
Yeah.
We steamed in and tried to take control, didn't we?
Yes.
And they've now said we'll take up to 20,000 people over 5 years. Well, that's hardly any. They are prioritising women and children and religious minorities, all good. But I think that with a population of nearly 69,000 in this country currently, that we could probably take more.
Yeah, 69,000. Do you mean 69 million?
sorry, I meant 69 million. Yes, of course. Yes, thank you. Thank you for correcting me before our millions of listeners will do.
That's right, yeah. And I meant air conditioning, not central heating, by the way.
It's one of those things.
No, listen, I think I've had an epiphany about all this. I used to be terribly worried about immigration to this country. I thought we'd be swamped by people from all over the world and, you know, we'd lose our British culture and all that. But I've had an epiphany. These Afghan people, we've got to help them. And like you quite rightly say, 20,000, that's the size of a very small town somewhere in Cumbria or something like that. You know what I mean? And I'm sure we can help. And history tells us, by the way, that people who come to this country, and I'm thinking perhaps of Ugandans who were expelled by Idi Amin, the people who come here are so grateful that they've landed in a civilized and prosperous country that, generally speaking, they take advantage of that. And many of them go on to create, you know, business dynasties, they become doctors, they work hard, they go to Cambridge University, and all that can only help the country to prosper.
Absolutely. And the Afghan people are very dignified, very thoughtful people. They contribute. Yeah. You know, they didn't have much choice in the fact that we steamed in there. And okay, the Western coalition over two decades tried to do our best, but. Yeah. Did we really have a responsibility to do that? Who knows?
Well, I don't know. I don't think that, you know, marshalling and patrolling a country like Afghanistan stops terrorist attacks around the world because
of course it doesn't.
They just move to Pakistan or whatever, you know, and plot there. Yeah. But anyway, look, that's a very deep subject. Let's talk about something a lot lighter and brighter. The world has gone mad and I see it now being trailed, you know, from now until the weekend. The new edition of Strictly Dancing is coming back. It's all over the front of the TV covers for the weekend. I suppose you'll be riveted and glued to your set, will you, Miss Jones?
No, I won't. I can't stand the programme. I think it's horrible. God. I don't like ballroom dancing. Mm. It sort of smacks of the 1950s and Grace Kelly and, you know, big sticky out frocks and all that. I don't get it. It's not interesting to me. It's not modern. I'd rather go to the ballet or something like that, really. It's something more classical. I don't know. It just doesn't have that spark for me. Sorry.
Yeah, well, you're the first one I've spoken to who's actually disliked it. Every other woman I ever speak to just says, oh, no, it's fantastic, you know, greatest show on earth and all that. I suppose it's...
Why? Why is it?
I don't know. I've no idea.
Do you know what it is? It's all fakery. It's all makeup. It's all fake tan. It's all sparkles. It's all kind of corsets holding them all in all their fat blobby places.
Yes.
And seeing them twirling around the floor, making idiots of themselves. It's not entertainment to me. Yeah. Sorry.
Well, when they have, is it Strictly Come Dancing Celebrity or something? When they have people like Anne Widdecombe on and...
It's all the same thing. So they are mostly down-table celebrities who partner up with professional dancers.
Oh, I see, yeah.
And then you've got this panel of judges who sort of profoundly pronounce their opinions, and you think, who cares, really?
Yeah.
I have watched it a few times because I think, is it me? Am I missing something? Do I not get it?
Yeah.
And I watch it and I still don't get it, so I won't waste my time.
No, I won't either. I couldn't stand it when Ed Balls was on it. I didn't watch it, but I saw all the clips and all that kind of stuff. This is a man who wanted us to vote for him to be a responsible politician running the Exchequer. He was first secretary to the Treasury, so he's like deputy chancellor. So that's a very important job in this country. So one minute he's expecting us to put our faith in him to run the country's finances. The next minute he wants us to vote for him for being a clown. You know,
and it trivialises politics.
Completely trivialises it.
A dangerous arena to go into.
Yeah, I totally agree. Anne Widdecombe's the same. I used to like Anne Widdecombe a lot, and I've worked on a couple of shows with her on TV. She was on the same panel as me on Jeremy Vine on Five once. And I said to her then, I found it very strange to accept that, you know, a former politician like you, Anne, you know, who took life very seriously, could get into such a trivial programme like Strictly Come Dancing. And she said, well, it was only after I retired from politics, of course, you know, it was perfectly acceptable then. Next thing I know, about 12 months later, she's become an MEP again. She's joined Nigel Farage with an MEP. So I thought, hang on, you told me you'd retired from politics and yet, you know, you made a clown of yourself on that programme. Anyway.
Disrepute. It does. It's not an attractive thing. What do we get next? Theresa May twirling around the floor? Or imagine Boris.
Bloody hope not.
Prime ministership. I mean, the mind boggles.
Yeah. Yeah.
What about you, though, Porky? You'd be good on that.
I wouldn't. I do read sometimes about the people who've been on it. They say it's incredibly hard work, the training. You know what I mean? You're doing it for like 10 hours a day for 3 weeks before the show. And I'm certainly not up to that these days, I'm afraid. But
yeah, but think of the money, right?
Well, you know, money's one thing, but to what levels do you sink to earn your money? That's what I think sometimes. I look at these people.
Quite right. It's a form of prostitution.
Yeah, it is. I agree. Cashing in like that. On a much sadder note, of course, since we last spoke, young Sarah Harding has passed away. You know, the girl from Girls Aloud. What a terrible tragedy.
Yeah, really. I mean, 39 is so young, isn't it? And everyone has been saying what a lovely, positive, upbeat person she was. Somebody really worthwhile. Nobody deserves to die of breast cancer or any other kind of disease.
But, of course not.
But it does hit home very hard when somebody as young as Sarah goes.
Well, do you know what? This isn't meant to sound sexist, but when it's a beautiful young woman who dies, my sense of loss and grief is much, much greater than if it's a man who dies. Excuse me.
That is quite sexist, actually.
Well, maybe it is, but I just love women. When you see a beautiful woman like Sarah, I felt exactly the same when Caroline Flack died. You know, I thought...
Yeah, equally awful, terrible. Yeah. But that was even more tragic because
she took her own
life.
She
could have been helped.
Yeah. Yeah, yeah, and no, I totally agree. But I just, you know, I look at it, I think, my God, how terribly sad and tragic that is that, you know, the human race, that the world has lost somebody as beautiful as that woman. Talking about girl bands, by the way, I see there's a report this morning saying that Pussycat Dolls is breaking up again after reforming because they all still hate each other and they hate the people who run the club and all that. And, of course, the front woman for that is old Nicole, what's her name, isn't it?
Nicole Scherzinger.
Yeah, yeah, she's like...
Oh, we like her, though.
Do we?
Yeah, she's got a lot of personality. She was very good on The X Factor as one of the judges. She was in the beginning, at least. I think she tried too hard to compete with the Sharon Osbourne character.
Right.
And she became a bit eccentric towards the end.
Right.
I think she was much better in the beginning when she was more discerning and, you know, you could take her a bit more seriously. She had a lot to say and good opinions as well.
But yeah.
I think this thing about girl bands reforming, I mean, the Spice Girls tried it as well, didn't they?
Yeah.
If something's broken, you know, don't go back and try and fix it. It's like a relationship in the real world.
I agree.
We don't go back on our ex-fiancés, do we? Because whatever was wrong with it then is still going to be wrong with it now.
Oh, I totally agree. Usually it's because they need money that they reform, isn't it? That's certainly the case with some of the Spice Girls. But just listen to this. Dogged by tales of hatred and jealousy between members, girl group the Pussycat Dolls were synonymous with bitching and backstabbing throughout their heyday. Now, 2 years on from their shock reunion, relations have descended into such a mess again that the final nail is now in the coffin of the sexy pop band. Frontwoman Nicole Scherzinger announced in November 2019 she was reuniting with Ashley Roberts and all the rest. Now it's all blown up again. And apparently they're now being sued, or she is, by the founder, a woman called Robin Antin, who is suing Nicole. Oh, what a mess, eh?
Oh, who can be bothered? I mean, who cares, really? The thing is, sadly, girl groups get old and they're not appealing because everything that was appealing about them in their very exuberant, attractive youth fades away.
Yeah, no,
It's not the same as a male group, unfortunately.
Agree.
Yeah. Imagine the Rolling Stones as a bunch of 75-year-old women. I don't think it would have the same appeal, would it?
Do you know, honestly, you've made such a good point there. Can you imagine the Spice Girls at 80 on stage? You know, the Stones at 80 are on stage, minus, of course, the late, great Charlie Watts. But, it would be unbelievable. So it'd be like Joan Collins and a load of people looking like her on stage, writhing around. It would be vomit-inducing, wouldn't it?
It's quite unseemly with the men doing it.
Yeah,
it is.
I agree. I think
they've been around for such a long time, and they've garnered their global audience, and people want to still keep seeing them while they're still alive because they've become a museum piece. Really, they're a spectacle. So it's less about the music; it's more about, my God, you know, it's almost an Elephant Man appeal. Yeah. It's something to stare at and wonder at. But if women were doing it. I can't quite believe I'm saying this, but it would be disgusting.
Yes, well, yeah, and, you know, you accuse me of sexism, Miss Jones. Well, I haven't to
say that, you know. I'm not trying to be sexist, I'm just saying it like it is, you know.
Yeah,
if we rocked up at the O2 Arena and saw, as you say, Joan Collins and cohorts all throwing their flesh around the stage and I just think it would be blood curdling.
Yes, it would be blood curdling. Very good expression. Well done. Now, Ms. Jones, I won't ask you what you had for breakfast today, but I've got a real thrill and a treat for you.
Nuts. I had nuts.
You had what?
Nuts.
Nuts. Oh, hazelnuts.
Boom.
Yeah, no, I don't know how you can have nuts for breakfast. I have peanuts sometimes with a pint of beer, but I wouldn't eat nuts for breakfast.
Yeah, well, you have those salted things. I don't eat those. I just have a handful of plain nuts sometimes. Yeah. If I'm not feeling hungry, but I know I should have something just to get my energy levels up, I'll have either a little handful of nuts or a banana.
Good God. I had a sausage sandwich for breakfast today.
What?
I do about 4 days a week, yeah.
Oh, already?
Yes. I love my sausage sandwiches, honestly. And sometimes get up at 4:30 because I just can't wait any longer to have my sausage sandwich. You know what I mean?
Oh, no, I bet your neighbours love you, the wafting stench of frying sausages.
What do you mean the wafting stench of frying? It's one of the most appealing smells and odours in the world.
Not at 4 o'clock in the morning to the neighbours.
Sizzling sausages in a pan. And by the way, I'm going to try sizzling.
Say that again.
Sizzling sausages. Yeah. And I'm going to treat myself this weekend and buy myself a new sausage pan because I know how to live, don't I?
Is that a euphemism? And is this a family show?
No, I am. I'm going to buy myself a new sausage pan because I have a little pan in which I only cook sausages. I've got another bigger pan, which is for the bacon. But my sausage pan, which I've had probably about 18 months, is now so browned, you know what I mean? You know, no matter how much
you wash it, Michael.
Every day I scrub it with a scourer, okay?
And what about the pan? Oh, sorry.
Oh, Miss Jones, please, for goodness sake, you know. And I try to keep it silver and gleaming and clean. And you know what? No matter how much you do it, after about 18 months or 2 years, you have to throw the pan away because it's just... I don't know. It tainted and stained by, you know, the oil and all that kind of stuff. But anyway, there we go.
I've not tried a non-stick one.
It is non-stick. It's non-stick. But
how is it silver? If you get it silver, you've scrubbed all the non-stick off.
Oh, yeah. I think this one is probably not non-stick. I think you're right, actually. I got it because it was nice.
A nice non-stick one, a good heavy one with a heavy base.
Yes.
That should last you for 20 years.
Yeah, well, I change.
And that's much better for the planet rather than keep throwing them away.
Well, I always change about it every 18 months. But the reason we got onto this subject is because I know you will love what I'm going to tell you now. Frey Bentos have invented the all-day breakfast in a tin. So have you ever had a Frey Bentos pie where you have to actually get a tin opener and open the tin and then you sort of boil it in water or put it in the oven or something? You've never had one of those?
Yeah, I have. As a child, my mother occasionally cooked things like that.
Yes.
But nowadays, I try to avoid all of that because there is a very high salt and sugar content to all these.
Yeah, you're probably right.
Things.
Yeah, you're probably right. It says here, tin dinner legends Frey Bentos have put two sausage-shaped fingers up to the smashed avocado brigade with a full English breakfast pie. At £1.50, it has all the key fry-up favourites, baked beans, Cumberland sausage, bacon and black pudding, encased in the firm's signature puff pastry. I tell you what, as soon as we finish this recording, I'm off down the supermarket to get half a dozen of those, Miss Jones.
Oh, dear. And that's going to become the Parry breakfast fodder for the next few months, is it?
It may well be. I like avocado, by the way. Avocado, smashed avocado on toast, I think is beautiful. Do you ever have that?
Yes, it's a favourite dish of mine.
Yeah.
They feed us all the stuff about we shouldn't be eating avocados because of the irrigation problems.
That's right.
All this kind of thing. I'm a big fan of eating things that we grow here.
Yes, I am.
Rather than flying tomatoes thousands of miles around the world, why don't we just eat the ones that we grow here?
I totally agree. I got some tomatoes yesterday from Tesco's and it said grown in Spain. And I'm thinking, what are you there? You're right there, Miss Jones.
I was choking at the thought of tomatoes flying halfway around the world. It's a disgusting thought, isn't it?
No, I think you were choking on the Frey Bentos all-day breakfast, more likely.
or the sausages, the two fingers to the world.
Yes, right, the sausage fingers to the world. But, you know, like you, I thought, why on earth are these tomatoes being flown here from Spain when you could build huge greenhouses in this country and grow all the tomatoes we need, couldn't you?
I saw an amazing documentary on television last week, it must have been.
Oh, yes.
And it was talking about the H2O, this kind of molecule that, you know, the, basically our dependence on water and what we've done
to
the planet by damming rivers. So they showed a map of the world where all the dams are holding rivers back.
Yeah.
And the pressure that is put on the internal geology of the Earth, the planet, as a result.
Yeah.
And it's tilted the Earth about 3 degrees off its axis, which has caused the water table to shift.
Good God.
And it's causing immense problems going forward. Also, you've got in states like Arizona in America, vast fields of alfalfa sprouts and avocados being grown, and they're dragging the water up from the water table to irrigate them by spraying them.
Yeah.
And this again is causing a huge problem with the water supply.
Yeah.
So where this is going to end up, who knows?
I don't know. A lot of this happens in China, of course. They have massive dams in China, you know, and the Hoover Dam in America, of course, and all that kind of stuff. But at some stage, you've got to sort of stop water moving around, I suppose. Okay, folks, you are, of course, listening to A Life on Planet Porky. Ms. Jones, I have announced to the world that we will be putting out Planet Porky once a week now, every Friday morning at 6 a.m. I did tell our millions of... excuse me, my voice has gone now.
It's catching, isn't it?
Millions of followers and listeners that... Although we always enjoy doing 2 a week, I'm afraid that the pressure of work, which we are now both enduring happily, I think, means that we can't really guarantee top quality twice a week. So I've had a very good response back, and I'm sure you've seen it as well. People have said, that's great, you know, greater quality once a week, and people seem to be pretty happy with it.
Yeah, I hope they are. I think we bring something fresh to the week with our observations of what's going on in the world and in our own particular worlds as well. It's really great to have all the listeners along. So stay with us, folks.
Yes, indeed. Now, I want to talk to you about somebody who you probably don't know very well, because although you have been in showbiz all your life, this gentleman, his name is Donald Zek, has just died at the age of 102. But I've read all the obituaries, and he clearly was one of the most legendary showbiz reporters in the history of Fleet Street, where he started, can you believe it or not, in 1936.
He was a legend. When my father went to work for the Daily Mirror, I think in the 50s and 60s, the Mirror was we forget this, it was the world's biggest selling newspaper.
It was. It used to sell 4.2 million copies a day, and right behind it, and it was obviously, it was the working man's paper, you know, sort of bit left-wing paper of the Labour Party. On the other side of the political divide was the Daily Express, which was, printed by, I've forgotten his name now, the press baron, Lord...
Beaverbrook.
Thank you very much indeed, Lord Beaverbrook, who went on to become Minister of War during the Second World War, worked with Winston Churchill. But Beaverbrook set up and published the Daily Express, which sold 4 million a day, and the Mirror on the other side of the political divide sold 4.2 million a day, the one, of course, your father worked on with great distinction for a few decades.
Yeah, so Donald Zek was a feature of my childhood, really. You know, he was just somebody you saw on the breakfast table every morning because he was there in the paper alongside my dad. Well, obviously, Dad was on the back pages. He was kind of in the middle of the paper.
Right.
When the stars wanted to talk, they talked to Donald Zek because they had such a huge reach. Yeah. They were able to reach such a huge number of readers.
Yes.
But the unusual thing about him, he became friends with people he interviewed. So people like Marilyn Monroe and the Beatles.
Yeah.
I think he was on Humphrey Bogart's yacht for a holiday.
That's right, yeah.
He knew Cary Grant, he knew Charlie Chaplin. Mm. Extraordinary character. He looked like a sort of slightly eccentric uncle. Yeah. He wasn't very attractive.
Mm.
And he wrote quite staid prose, you'd have to say. Mm. But he did get it out of people.
Yeah.
And they did always ask him back because he was inoffensive.
Mm.
He projected them well. He did occasionally upset people. So I think he fell out with Sinatra at one point.
Yeah, he did.
He might have said something a bit pointed.
And he fell out with John Lennon. He went to Amsterdam for the bed-in. They had two bed-ins, didn't they, John and Yoko? One in Canada and one in Amsterdam. Indeed. And the one in Amsterdam, apparently John Lennon had him thrown out the room because he said something, you know, which Lennon didn't agree with. But reading his obituaries, I mean, he used to fly around America with Marilyn Monroe. Can you imagine that? You know, can you imagine saying, no, I'm off to America now. Where are you going? Well, I'm going on tour with Marilyn Monroe. And she used to demand that Donald Zach went with her. And, like, you know, he wasn't gay. He was very heterosexual. So he really fancied Marilyn Monroe. What a position for a heterosexual man to be in, to be flying around the world with Marilyn Monroe.
Yeah, but you know what they say, away from the spotlight, they're just as plain as a piece of bread.
Well, yeah, but not Marilyn Monroe, I have to say.
Women have been glamorous all the time, I can assure you. Yeah. No woman is.
Well, there you go. But you're absolutely right. If Humphrey Bogart came to London, Donald Zek would meet him at the airport, Frank Sinatra, and then Donald Zek would fly off to the south of France and spend a couple of weeks on Humphrey Bogart's yacht. He's a fascinating character, isn't he, Humphrey Bogart?
Yeah, my father loved him. You know, he had his few kind of superstars that he admired. Yeah. Quite a strange character, really, because he was so ugly.
Yes, that's true. That's true. But, of course, he was so attractive to women because he was Humphrey Bogart, wasn't he?
I suppose so, yeah. The fame and the name kind of carried him forward. It's a bit like Fred Astaire. I used to see him, had a great figure, by the way. Yeah. We used to watch him dancing in these old films they used to recycle on a Saturday afternoon while my mum was standing there doing the ironing. Yeah. You know, we'd have these old black and white films on. Yeah. I used to look at Fred Astaire and think, I mean, he was only a young man in those days, but he looked like your granddad, and he really was quite unattractive.
Yeah, with that
but
slick
there was
back
something appealing about him.
Yeah, with that slick back hair and all that.
Yeah.
I wasn't a great one for musicals and all that, but if I had to choose a guy to watch dancing on telly, it would have been Gene Kelly in Singing in the Rain, all that.
Well, he was beautiful. He did have a gorgeous face.
Yeah, did he? Yeah. Okay. Well, I'll take your word for it. I can't remember, Miss Jones, whether or not we've talked about the Harrods bag. Have I spoken to you about the Harrods bag?
How dare you call me a bag?
No, not that. I read that Harrods have decided, the guy who runs the place, you know, the chief executive, to reduce the number of Harrods bags by 40% to help in the battle against litter and plastic and all that kind of stuff.
Well, finally, they get around to it. Everybody else has been doing it for years.
Yeah, but I kind of pointed out to myself reading this.
That's an interesting turn of phrase. Yeah. I pointed out to myself. Yeah, you could have just read it.
Yeah. No, that's right. I pointed out myself that nobody ever throws a Harrods bag away. What they do is they cherish these Harrods bags, keep them, and then they put them in their handbag or in their briefcase, and they go out and buy something from somewhere else and then take the Harrods bag out, put it in the Harrods bag, because it's a massive snob factor, isn't it?
Well, I suppose some weird people might do something like that.
Well,
but
they
I
do
wouldn't.
All the time.
I have a good story about Harrods carry bag. Yeah. John Entwistle, the bass player in The Who.
Yes.
He sadly left us some years ago. He loved the colour, the green, sort of quite fuggy green of the Harrods carrier bag so much that he bought a Rolls Royce, had it converted into a sort of estate car. Can you imagine? An estate Rolls Royce, so that he could fit his big Irish wolfhound, Fitz Perfectly was its name, into the back of this Rolls Royce.
Yeah.
He had a Harrods plastic carrier bag and he took it down to the body shop and he said to the guy, please spray my Rolls Royce this color.
Good God.
And he drove around in a Rolls Royce the color of a Harrods carrier bag.
It's fantastic. And did he have like gold braiding as well to make it, because the coloring of the word Harrods is gold, isn't it?
Yeah, I can't remember any gold braiding, but yeah, I went in the car quite a few times. Right. Usually in the boot, I have to say. They used to put me in the boot with the dog.
The dog
was bigger than me.
Oh, dear. We won't make, the obvious sort of pun and joke about that.
No, when the car once pulled up back at Quarwood, John's house, and Kenny Jones, the drummer, was waiting there for us, and John opened the boot and out jumps Fitz Perfectly and then me.
Yeah.
And Kenny was yelling, who let the dogs out?
Shocking. But no, what I'm saying is you never see a Harrods plastic bag on the pavement because people just don't throw them away. I know somebody who told me once that they go to Harrods and they buy something for just £10. That's about the cheapest thing you can buy in Harrods, just to get a Harrods bag. And then they go out to the store, throw away whatever they've bought into a litter bin, and then put all their other purchases from Selfridge or something into the Harrods bag because it's symbolism. And, look at me. I'm rich and posh. I shop at Harrods. I don't think, Ms. Jones, I've ever been in Harrods.
Yeah, I have been in there a few times. But Do you know what? You're more likely to be mugged on the street if you're carrying a Harrods carry bag and have that bag snatched off you.
Yeah, I suppose you're right. I suppose you are. I will make a trip to Harrods when I read that there's four bars in there now, you know, bars type restaurants or something. So if you go as a couple and one of you, and I'm, you know, going to be sexist and say probably the female in the couple wants to do a lot of shopping, then her male companion can retire to the bar. I think that's a very civilised way of shopping.
Yes, it is. Yeah, I have sometimes had lunch there with Andy Peebles.
Oh, yeah.
The former Radio 1 presenter. He lives up in Blackburn now.
Yes.
Blackburn, Lancashire. But when he comes down, he always goes to Harrods to buy his coffee. They have a particular brand of coffee that they like very much. They can only get in Harrods. So Andy and I often meet there and have some lunch in one of the little restaurants there.
Very nice. Indeed. That's excellent. Now, have you ever met Tony Hadley?
Yeah, loads of times. Right. I did their press, Spandau Ballet, when I worked at Chrysalis years ago.
Oh, right. OK, great. Because I was reading a feature on Tony Hadley. He was talking about his worst holiday experience. He said an educational cruise with the school in 1973 in the Mediterranean in Naples. I went to a pizzeria and I drank so much wine, I had to be carried back onto the ship by all my classmates as I couldn't stand. Have you had an experience like that on a school trip?
No, we used to go to London Zoo and the Planetarium. That was about it.
Really?
Yeah. Nothing as glamorous as a Mediterranean cruise.
Oh, well, my sisters both went on Mediterranean cruises on that famous boat, and the name's escaped me now, that became a troop carrier in the Falklands War. You know the one I mean? Canberra. Canberra. It was called the Canberra.
Oh, okay, yeah.
Yeah, and when it's sort of out of season, the Canberra's used for school trips around the Mediterranean and all that. And I remember them telling me they went to Portugal and Lisbon and all sorts of places like that. But that didn't appeal to me. I used to go on the skiing trip to Switzerland, which I absolutely loved. I used to love the mountains and the snow and the cold air and all that kind of stuff. But to get there, you had to go on what was known as the couchettes. You'll know what the couchettes are, won't you?
Yeah, when you sleep on the train.
Yeah, that's right, absolutely. So you get on the train and you go into your compartment and you think, hang on, where are the beds? And in fact, all the beds fold out from the wall. You see what I mean? So
they are magnificently uncomfortable.
Ghastly. So what looks like a carriage with two bench seats in it is in fact six beds. So you can imagine how cramped it is. But the thing is, because you were locked in there with, you know, five other blokes, so six young kids, you'd smuggle alcohol in, and honestly, there were some terrible, terrible scenes. You know, people vomiting from the top bunk and all this kind of stuff.
Oh, dear. That's disgusting.
It is absolutely disgusting.
My son went on a very good school trip. He was studying Mandarin at Dulwich College, which was a very good subject to have.
Indeed.
And Dulwich College have branches of this school in Beijing and Shanghai.
Lovely.
So the kids went off on this, the Mandarin students went off on a trip to Beijing.
Yes.
And Henry got arrested, actually.
Really?
Because they were jumping on the beds and they managed to break one of the beds for which they were arrested. They were about 15 at the time.
Yeah.
And can you imagine me back here, thousands of miles away, round the other side of the world, trying to negotiate with these teachers on the phone? It was the most hideous experience.
I bet it was. Were the teachers Chinese?
Well, Miss Zhang, who took them out there, she was British Chinese. Yeah, she got the sack for that, actually.
Disgraceful. Let's go down the empire, eh?
I don't think they were quite had their eye on the ball.
No, I don't think they did. No. Have you, where you live, very nice neighbourhood, are there loads of weeds and stuff on the pavement now and all this? Because
all growing down the side of our building. And at first I was a bit annoyed about it, but now I see the point.
No, well, I don't see the point. Apparently lots of local authorities have decided just to let weeds grow on their pavements and their pathways because they say that to get rid of them, you've got to put pesticide, you've got to spray the pesticide, and that's damaging the earth. I think that's a load of absolute bollocks. I don't want my pavements all strewn with weeds. I don't want to see weeds growing in the gutters of the roads, which I have seen in some places I've been to. I think it's disgraceful. When people come to this country, it needs to portray the image of a neat, well-run and orderly country, not weeds all over the place. It's dreadful.
Oh, you are angry about
this. I am,
I think, as an asthmatic, that with fewer chemicals in the air is a much better environment. Rewilding is the way to go. I think it's not too late to restore our insect population, all the bugs and butterflies and bees and all those kinds of things. And this is why they've done it, to bring those species back. So
it looks dreadful.
You're an animal lover. You love your bees and all that.
I do. And I walk across, you know, parts of Surrey sometimes to get to a pub on the other side of the Downs or something like that. And there's loads of wilding fields which have just been left to grow. And the bees buzz around and the butterflies and looks beautiful, but not in my street, please. And when you're told now, oh, don't worry about that front garden lawn of yours, you know, being all neat and tidy, just let it grow wild. It makes it look as though the person who lives in that house is a total scruff.
No, I disagree. That's just conditioning. That's because you're used to a nice, neatly mowed lawn.
Yes, I am.
But my gardener in my previous house used to say to me, he would never cut the edges of the lawn. He'd mow the lawn, but he'd never go around the edges with those kind of cutter things. He said because all the little frogs live in those edges.
Wow.
And he loved animals. He hated the idea of chopping up the frogs.
Yeah.
So he would, you know, those tiny little frogs, when the tadpoles first hatch or whatever, they all live in those edges around the lawns there. Mm. And so he would never cut them. And actually, I got used to seeing them a bit overgrown, and I came to really like that look in the end.
Oh, right. Okay. Well, you know, I like a, you know, I'd go into Hampton Court or somewhere like that and see the beautifully manicured lawns. And, you know, to me, it just shows the magnificence of what a garden can be like. I had a girlfriend once who was very, very keen on gardens. And we sometimes she'd say, oh, look, I tell you where I want to go today. What are you talking about? We'd drive like 12 miles out into the country and go to somebody's house to look at their garden. Apparently, these gardeners are so proud of their homes, they open their own gardens to other people.
Yeah, they used to do that in Dulwich. They had a sort of week in May when certain people would open their gardens and you could go and have a look. If they had these, you know, very elaborate, that's the word I was looking for.
Yes.
Have you ever been to Sissinghurst in Kent?
No, no.
So Sissinghurst Castle, where Vita Sackville West and Harold Nicholson famously lived.
Yeah.
There's a white garden there, which is amazing to visit.
Yeah.
It's a really interesting place. I've driven in there a few times when I've been down that way, but I've never stopped to take the time to do the tour, and I need to do that.
Yeah.
It looks really interesting.
Yeah, I love old houses. I love going to Hampton Court. I've been there a few times, but I still like, you know, looking around it. It's great. Now,
I could see you living there, actually.
Say again?
I could see you living in Hampton
Court. Yeah, good. Yeah, I'm a bit of a Henry VIII type figure, aren't I?
Yes, I can absolutely see you done up in all his kind of,
that's right,
you know, knickerbockers and all that.
Absolutely. On the banks.
Patrolling the maze and things like that. Yes.
Banks of the River Thames. What do you make out on a report I've read? Graduates compete for a stint in jail. And apparently graduates from Oxbridge, at Oxford and Cambridge, are now queuing up to become jail governors because the latest kind of, you know, social trend is giving something back to society. Why would you go to Oxford or Cambridge, get a first-class honours degree, which would set you up for life in the city or in one of the top professions like law, and suddenly want to become a prison governor?
Freudian slip. I think they're not exactly queuing up when you read the details of this piece. That yes, it's true that there are 24 applicants for every place as a prison governor, but if you think about that, count up the number of prisons there are around the country, there are not that many governor jobs going.
Yes,
so it makes sense that they'd get a lot more applicants than they've got jobs to dish out.
Yes,
I personally would find working in a prison a very depressing environment.
Oh, I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. A, I couldn't stand to see other people locked up. But B, the quality of work and life. There was a great programme on a few weeks ago or a couple of months ago now called Time, I think it was. And it starred, you know, the rough, gruff Yorkshire actor, Sharp. What was his name? He was married four times.
I know who you mean, can't think of his name.
Bean, wasn't it?
Sean Bean,
yeah, that's Sean Bean, yeah. And he was brilliant in it, you know. He was a middle-aged man who ended up in jail because of a drink-driving offence, you know, in which somebody sadly got killed. So he's not a career criminal and ended up in this jail. Oh, I mean, it was harrowing. the sort of conditions that you have to put up with and the gangs who rule the jails and, oh, revolting. Every time I see one of those, it makes me very, very conscious of not getting too drunk one night in case I end up in jail. Not that I'd ever...
Exactly, yeah, because it can happen to any of us. But yeah. I know somebody who, oh, took a hit for somebody else who had committed a crime and didn't want to go to prison. So he paid this guy a lot of money to go down for him, as it were. And he thought this would be a doddle. He got a nice big fat wedge in his bank account, and it was 6 months behind bars, and how hard was it going to be? This guy went mad after he came out because of all the experiences he had to endure inside, including being male raped.
Oh, God. I mean, it's all that sort of thing that you read about. Oh, my God, I couldn't, I just couldn't bear it. A mate of mine, in fact, quite a famous sports reporter. I think your dad probably would have known him. He wasn't your dad's generation, but he was, you know, maybe 10 or 20 years after him. But he was in a wine bar in Bromley, and he'd had a few drinks, and he did have a drink problem, this guy. And he got it into his head that was some of the people in there were talking about his wife. And they left the wine bar, but then he realised he'd left his phone. So he went back, and when he went back, he got into another altercation with these guys, accused them of things they hadn't done, and he bit one of them on the cheek.
Oh, dear.
Yeah, I mean, you know, what a strange way to assault somebody, you know what I mean? And anyway, they left, and he thought nothing more of it because he was intoxicated. A few days later, the cops turned up, he was arrested. He ended up getting 14 months in jail. And again, it was an horrendous experience, you know.
I had a painter decorator back in my old house who used to come to us regularly. And his wife was flirting with somebody in a pub one night, and he got home and he belted her.
That's terrible.
And he went down for that for a couple of years. And
should have done,
it destroyed his relationship with his children. He never saw them again.
Yeah. No, you know, people say, oh, prisons, holiday camps and all that. Not in my experience from the people I've spoken to, you know, absolutely horrendous places. This this mate I was telling you about, he ended up in a jail very close to me when he got downgraded to sort of, you know, category C or something like that, you know what I mean?
One of those open jails.
Well, it wasn't actually open, but it was the softest jail above an open jail, if you see what I mean.
And what one's that then? Which one is near you?
It's in Banstead in Surrey. And it's called Highdown, I think. And of course, you're so naive about all this. I thought, oh, I bet he's missing the papers and all that. So I turned up one Sunday morning with a set of newspapers. I don't know what I was thinking about. And I got to the gate and I said, look, could you give these two? And I told them my name and all that. They said, are you mad? And I said, no. I said, he's a mate of mine, lives local. I live locally. And I thought he'd like these.
He definitely lives locally.
Yeah, absolutely. and of course, they just laughed at me, and I ended up having to take the papers away. But anyway, there we are. We can't leave this podcast without a quick word about our old mate Piers. Doesn't look now like he's going back to GMB.
No, it doesn't. It's all very embarrassing, isn't it, for GMB, for ITV, because he's still working for ITV, for a start. He's still doing Piers Morgan's Life Story.
Yes.
Good for him. I'm glad that this inquiry went his way.
Yes.
Because obviously, in a democratic country, we do have the right to free speech and to an opinion.
Yep.
And this has been upheld. But as we said earlier, we should never go back. I think it would be foolish for him to return to GMB. Everybody's moved on. He's also hinted at his way forward, and he's talking something of international reach.
Global.
So is that going to be CNN or something?
I don't know. He's been at CNN, of course, hasn't he? And
That would be going back, I suppose.
Yeah.
Maybe another new international news channel.
Well, there's so many openings these days on a worldwide basis. So, yeah, I mean, he'll pop up somewhere again soon.
He is a star. We are absolute fans of Piers Morgan on this
podcast. Absolutely.
And wherever he goes, we'll be right behind him.
We certainly will. You're absolutely right. Right. Okay, folks, that's it for this podcast. Thank you very much indeed for having joined us. Miss Jones, I hope you have a good week ahead. We'll be back with our followers, with our listeners, a week from today. Until then, cheerio. I sometimes get up at 4:30 because I just can't wait any longer to have my sausage sandwich, you know what I mean?
Oh, no, I bet your neighbours love you, the wafting stench of frying sausages.
What do you mean the wafting stench of frying? It's one of the most appealing smells and odours in the world.
Not at 4 o'clock in the morning to the neighbours.
Sizzling sausages in a pan. And by the way, I'm going to try sizzling.
Can you say that again?
Sizzling sausages. And I'm going to treat myself this weekend and buy myself a new sausage pan because I know how to live, don't I?
Is that a euphemism? And is this a family show?
No, I am. I'm going to buy myself a new sausage pan because I have a little pan which in which I only cook sausages. I've got another bigger pan which is for the bacon. But my sausage pan, which I've had probably about 18 months, is now so browned, you know what I mean? You know, no matter how much
you wash it, Michael.
Every day I scrub it with a scourer, okay?
And what about the pan? Oh, sorry.
Oh, Miss Jones, please, for goodness sake, you know. I kind of pointed out to myself reading this.
That's an interesting turn of phrase. Yeah. I pointed out to myself. Yeah. You couldn't just read it.
No, that's right. I pointed out myself that nobody ever throws a Harrods bag away.
Quite a strange character, really, because he was so ugly.
Yes, that's true. That's true. But of course, he was so attractive to women because he was Humphrey Bogart, wasn't he?